Welcome, everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I am joined today for what will probably be the first time in of many over the course of the next couple months or so. Jake Madison of Locked On Pelicans, he's out there. We were talking a little bit before we went live about what the vibe is out there in New Orleans right now. The vibe in New Orleans is like perpetually great, and then right now I can't even imagine.
Yeah, it's always pretty fun here, and this just kind of breathes some life into the city after a pretty rough basketball season, which was really unfun if you're a fan and really unfun to cover if you're me. And, you know, it's like, what is it in Dumb and Dumber, where it's like, and then you completely do the opposite and like get me back excited.
Completely redeem yourself.
Yeah, like that's entirely what happened here through sheer dumb luck, mind you, but I'll take it. So everyone's pretty happy. It's been a busy 48 hours, but only good things, and this is kind of a good kind of busy.
Speaking of Dumb and Dumber, the Lakers are going to be negotiating against the Pelicans with Rob Pelinka and Kurt Rambis playing central roles. That's going to be fun to watch from afar. I want to start here because really everything else, all the other conversations that we have from this point on are going to be pretty much moot if this remains the case. Do you think Gail Benson is going to be interested at all in dealing with the Lakers?
Yeah, I do. I think the idea that they're just like, screw the Lakers, we're not talking to them and we're going to string them along is kind of overblown. I can tell you, I think a deal was closer than reported at the trade deadline. And I think the Lakers just didn't kind of give them enough first round picks that they wanted.
Yep.
And they also just wanted to wait. There's no reason not to. You know, I don't think the offer is going to change that much. And, you know, there's no reason to not wait for those other bids to come in. So I think this has kind of just been the plan all along. And now with new leadership in there in David Griffin, who's taking kind of a long-term look at this, he's going to take the best offer. And if it happens to be the Lakers, it happens to be the Lakers and a deal will get done.
Yeah, he's too good of a hire to make if you aren't going to offer him full autonomy over the organization.
He has it, and he even said as much. Like, that's the reason he took this job. You know, we've heard him, he turned down other positions. The Knicks really wanted him, and he wasn't going to step into any position, I don't think, unless he had full control. And it seems like ownership, Gail Benson's bought into that. And he said in his introductory press conference, he's like, I know they want to win, and I know they want to compete because I made some outrageous demands, and they said yes to all of it. So I can't imagine that this would work if he's kind of got one hand tied behind his back. So it's up to him, and he's going to pick whatever deal he likes the most.
Where we sit right now, I was doing some thinking over the last couple, you know, like 48 hours or so, and I've been trying to, you know, put together math and offers for whatever, and we'll get into that as the show goes along. But that's the key point here. That's the central point that needs to be made. And the other thing too here that's, I think, going to help in Lakers and Pelicans dealings here is David Griffin's relationship with Clutch and with Rich Paul and with that whole group of people. Dale Demps had no such relationship whatsoever with those guys. And now, you know, Griffin has won a championship with LeBron. He has, you know, negotiated against Clutch. He has worked with Clutch as they, you know, try to fill out the rest of the roster out there in Cleveland to the best of whatever optimized LeBron at the time. That, I think, is something that I don't think has been covered quite enough here. Just that relationship, because it was non-existent previously, and if it did exist, it was bitterness. It was pretty much just straight ugliness between the Pelicans and Rich Paul and the rest of Clutch.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I don't think Dell Demps really had a good relationship with anybody, but certainly not Rich Paul, certainly not Clutch during that time. And in David Griffin even said it in his intro, you know, he has a good relationship with them. He used it in the context of trying to keep Anthony Davis here. But I think we can rule out that he's going to be back in New Orleans. Like, I just don't see it happening almost at all. So, you know, the other thing is it's a big relationship driven league. Like, you don't want to piss people off and burn bridges. Particularly with a group that's as powerful as Clutch is. And something that might come up is maybe Zion signs with them and he hasn't picked an agent yet. So that's something to keep in mind too, going forward. You want to kill the good mood here in New Orleans, have that come across like the Woj bomb of Zion Williamson signs with Rich Paul and Clutch Sports. And like, things are going to turn quickly, but you can't burn bridges. You can't be acrimonious and be like, okay, whatever, we're going to send AD to his least preferred destination. Maybe you do it, of course, if that makes the best offer. But you got to keep in mind that this stuff can have ramifications years down the line.
Absolutely. I don't think, just based on some of the stuff I've heard about him and the way he kind of carries himself, Zion doesn't seem to me like a clutch client.
No, not at all. I agree with that. You know, we were making jokes because his stepdad went on radio and was speaking today.
Oh, talking big ball about
brand. Right? Yeah. Uncle Dennis, maybe? I don't know. And he was like, yeah, he's going to play there. And all of a sudden he's like speaking for Zion, and someone texted me being like, is this one of those situations? I'm like, I don't think so, luckily. I think like everything's good. He said very nice things. So that's already like the opposite of what you're kind of expecting when you hear these people talk. So, no, I don't think there's going to be any issues with Zion on any of that. It's just, you know, David Griffin wants to build relationships. That's really kind of what he keeps talking about. And that means having a good one with Rich Paul.
Yeah, it's important. It's important. It's why it was kind of baffling to me while all the Aaron Mintz stuff was going on between Aaron and the Lakers. It was odd to me that he would want to burn the bridge the way that he did, and that the Lakers just kind of let him. It was really weird to watch that kind of manifest itself as that was taking place. We're going to take a quick second here, and when we come back, we're going to turn our attention a little bit to Anthony Davis. There's a vibe that I get off of him that really makes me nervous, and I wish I didn't have this off of him. I'm going to run it by you. We'll see what you think of it, and then we'll build the conversation from there. So one of the funnier moments that took place last year was when Anthony Davis was talking about, you know, the end was near on his time in New Orleans. I think it was all over the All-Star break. And he said something along the lines of, like, I'm going to send the nicest Instagram post about the city. And I'm just, that's not helping, Anthony.
No, it wasn't even, I wish he said that. It was like, I'll do what everyone else does and put up an Instagram post like thanking him. Not even telling us it's going to be a nice one. Yeah, just he would do one for us. So like,
he's just
going to
copy and paste somebody else's.
Yeah.
when he said that, though, it reminded me way too much of the lack of self-awareness that Dwight Howard had at the end of his time in Orlando, some of his time here in LA, and then basically ever since. I'm not by any means calling those guys similar players. They have completely different skill sets or whatever, but it's, I wish it didn't, that didn't come to mind, and that didn't make me as nervous as it did. So like, I guess my question to you is, how different was last year compared to the rest of Anthony Davis's tenure? Did it come completely out of left field, or was this something that people kind of sort of saw coming?
I guess it depends on how close you are to the situation. Like, I wouldn't say it was like a complete heel turn, but it was pretty close to that. And, you know, AD's kind of been a quiet person his whole career. He doesn't kind of have that like natural charisma. I think everyone's just excited to see like Zion Williamson smiling in New Orleans versus like whatever AD was doing. So having him kind of come out and try and seemingly control things a little bit more and kind of craft the narrative in his image, but not successfully do it, and then like keep swinging at that and just making it worse and worse for himself. I mean, we know about the t-shirt stuff, that's all folks thing. And then he was saying, well, I don't pick out my clothes, which I actually believe, but you're also, you know, someone who's not nine. And if someone put out a shirt that you don't want to wear or don't think it's a good idea, right, you have agency to get another t-shirt. And he basically made it seem like he couldn't.
Yeah. See what rich people weird. Do is they get dressed in the dark, and then they walk out of the room and they find out for the first time what they're going to be wearing that day.
It was so bizarre. Like, I'm sure you have a closet with other clothes in it. Like, maybe grab something else. And like, so it's either he can't change his clothes at like, or pick out what he wants to wear, and he's not allowed if he doesn't like it, or he didn't care. Like, those are your two options, and neither of them are good. And, you know, he was out there trying to explain it. It just makes it so much worse. It's just like this lack of self-awareness something similar to what Dwight has, when it's like, maybe don't joke around right now. And Dwight would talk about like the candy he likes to eat, or that he signs a big contract with another team because they had his favorite candy on the airplane. It's like, these are what you're basing these huge monumental decisions on. And that's kind of what we really saw with Anthony Davis this past year. I think, I don't know if it's true colors of his that were kind of being shown, or so much that maybe he's just easily influenced. Like, he's very clearly taken some bad advice from Rich Paul and Clutch and whoever else. His dad's a big influence in his life too. And if he wants this, that's fine. But it seems like he just didn't understand the ramifications of what would happen if he did want this and go down this path, and then kind of fights it, and you just dig yourself deeper. So I think it rubbed people the wrong way. I think people look at him here in New Orleans dramatically differently than before. And even us in the media kind of talked about it, being like, this is the dude, like, this is what's going on with the self-proclaimed most dominant player in the league, and you're not allowed to change shirts. Like, you get it. It's tough to describe, but something kind of gives you just this odd vibe about him now.
I could see I could see something too, what you're talking about here, where he took such bad advice, and then the reaction to it was so bad that, you know, it's kind of like, yeah, I don't know if you're a Game of Thrones fan, but
I am.
But they had that one, the scene with Sansa and Ramses, that was like really controversial, right? It was grossly violent. They didn't have to go there, and then in this last season, the Hound or whatever basically says to her, yeah, you had to go through that in order to be the person you are. And I took that to mean, like, this is them doubling down on stuff because of how much hate they got for it, right?
Oh, that's interesting read into that. Yeah, no, it is. Here's a guy who, there's no other way to play this than be the bad guy the way he did it. And then it's like, oh, I don't want to be the bad guy, though. Yeah. Like,
deep down, we want to be liked.
Yeah, he so wants to be liked. It's so bizarre. And that's always like, oh, I didn't give him a list of teams, or I gave him every team in the league is on my list. Like, all of that stuff at All-Star Weekend was so weird.
Yeah.
And him just trying not to upset fans and make people dislike him, but you requested out midseason. You completely derailed the team's year, which, by the way, somehow ended up being a blessing in disguise on things, because if he requests out during the offseason, Dell Dempsey's maybe still here and we don't have David Griffin. So cool, it worked out. But you get what I'm saying. Like, there's no other way to be a bad guy about this. You just need to kind of realize it and accept the consequences, and he does not want to.
The other way that I could see that kind of going, the other situation that could be at play here, was he had gone through so much over the course of his, what, six seasons? He's in year
this
seven.
This is his seventh, yeah.
Yeah, so over the course of his first six seasons that he'd gone through so much, it was so much mediocrity, it had broken him down to the point where he was just like, you know what, enough. I'm at the very least, I'm in a position where I'm willing to take that kind of bad advice. If not, I'm going to, you know, if I'm not outright willing to drive this narrative myself, which, you know, again, you're closer to the situation than I have been over the last 6 years. But you look at some of the stuff that New Orleans did over the early stretches of his career, and then some of the decisions that they made over the middle portion, and then into the later portion of his tenure there. And I kind of understand it. That doesn't mean, though, that he didn't handle it poorly.
So I think everyone here in New Orleans completely gets it. Like, when he first requested the trade, or it broke, I forget who broke it. Everyone was like, yeah, makes sense. Like, we have definitely like failed this dude. Well, we, Dell Demps and, you know, ownership in the, mm-hmm. the franchise have failed this guy. No one faulted him for wanting out. Like, not one person was really upset that he was requesting a trade. We can kind of feel it coming this year. I'd basically been told early on, like, they need to win a title this year to keep him. And maybe that's not even enough. And so this was coming. It's just kind of the way he went about it, and that's what turned people against him. If he just said, yeah, you know, it hasn't worked here, I want to win, I want to go to the playoffs more than twice, I want more than five playoff wins, no one would have faulted him. If he had waited till after the season, no one would have faulted him. It's kind of everything else that went along with it. A lot of that having to do with the Lakers and the leaks and what was seemingly kind of everyone trying to get him there, even though at the time it did not make a ton of sense for New Orleans to trade him.
Yeah. Yeah. It was tough to watch that from afar, because everything kind of pointed to it makes more sense for New Orleans to wait this out, for the very reason that we saw it had the way it turned out, right? Like, they won the lottery, and that would have changed a few things, right? But But, you know, I understand the way that it, how it got to here. And I guess the next focus of the next segment is going to be looking ahead, looking forward to what negotiations, kind of how they have to take place, where the starting point would be, all of that good stuff. So we're going to take another quick second here. And when we come back, we're going to finish off with that. One of the things that I was talking about quite a bit last year, heading into the trade deadline and those negotiations there, was the Lakers cannot operate in poor faith with New Orleans. New Orleans is already going to be pissed. They're already going to be angry with Rich Paul and Clutch and everybody, and even LeBron James, right? They're going to be angry at every single aspect of the Lakers. So if the Lakers approach them with anything other than at least a respectable deal, then that's going to end the negotiations right there and there. And that's, I think, what happened, right? One of the first reports that we got there was that the Lakers were offering, I think, Rajon Rondo, KCP, and I think two first rounders. There were no young guys in the trade. It was basically like the absolute lowest amount that the Lakers could legally offer to make a legally fair offer to the Pelicans. And at that point, I don't even blame Dell Demps for saying, you know what, we'll talk to you guys in a few months.
I think Michael Beasley was thrown in there as like sweetener, maybe. Yeah, exactly. You know, the Lakers had this really great opportunity because the Celtics couldn't get involved in the bidding just yet. The lottery hadn't played out. And you have this period of almost exclusivity to negotiate with the Pelicans for Anthony Davis. But with that exclusivity comes a price, like a premium you've got to pay.
Yeah.
And you're going to have to blow the Pelicans away with an offer, because whatever offer that they are going to make is still going to be pretty close to the same thing, you know, next week.
Right.
And they just did not do that. And that, I think, like you said, kind of really hurt things off the bat. I think the publicity part of it too, and the leaking things to the media and from my accounts, which are of course tied to the Pelicans, are all saying that this was coming from the Lakers. Yeah. It didn't help things either. And it was just like, a college class on like what not to do.
Yeah, it was wild to watch it. It was, as it was taking place, I just kept like, you know, and I'm not claiming to be smarter than Rob Pelinka or well, I'm a little,
I think it's okay if you do.
We saw how the negotiations went with Tyronn Lue, so I guess I can't quite I can't undersell myself here, but I think that's exactly what happened. And I think what is going to be interesting to see this time around is whether or not the Lakers learned from their lessons that first time around, right? They do. Now, it's not literally exclusivity in the same way it was the first time back at the trade deadline when Boston literally couldn't get involved. But the Lakers do, I think, I'm biased, I think they do have the most that they can offer realistically. Boston, technically, depending on how you feel about some of their young guys, some of their draft stock, whatever, they theoretically might have a better package, but are they going to be willing to offer that if they're concerned about Kyrie Irving piecing in a month anyway, right? New York, I've seen recently come up in some of these conversations too, where, yes, they literally do have the number three pick to the Lakers' number four pick. But then I'm seeing Brian Windhorst go out there and talk about Kevin Knox and about Mitchell Robinson and about Dennis Smith Jr., who, by the way, was already traded because he wasn't good in Dallas. And he's talking about those guys on the same level as some of the Lakers guys. And you know, one of the things that I was thinking about and kind of preparing myself for this show was, if you're New Orleans and you walk away with, you know, let's say the offer is either of Lonzo Ball or Brandon Ingram, either and or Josh Hart, and then the number four overall pick. The Pelicans could go into next season with Drew Holiday, Jarrett Culver. They could have Brandon Ingram. They could have Josh Hart and Zion Williamson. And for like a restart, basically, you could do much worse than that lineup. What would, if that was where the Lakers started negotiations at, do you think they get the phone slammed on them?
No, I don't think they'll get the phone slammed on them. I think it might get gently put down and say, like, you're going to need to offer some more. You know, I definitely, so you're, it, This whole idea of what package is better comes down to like the main asset in each one and how do you value that? It really comes down to, do you like Brandon Ingram more than Jason Tatum or Jaylen Brown? Do you like Brandon Ingram more than the third overall pick? Because that's the centerpiece of a Knicks trade and some of the other things that other teams could offer. And that's kind of the big question. You know, I'm not as down on a Lakers package as a lot of other people are. I also think Lonzo Ball could fit really well next to Drew Holiday.
Yeah, he could.
The Pelicans want to have a facilitating point guard, and defensively they could be very, very good in the future. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot to like, and it's just, you know, it's whatever David Griffin values the most. You know, I think the Lakers got hurt here because, and everyone really got hurt here because of the way the lottery broke, kind of made it way more intriguing and kind of is going to force the offers to be upped for Anthony Davis than it would have been before. Say if the Knicks fall out of the top three, if they have the fourth pick, I don't think they're in the running whatsoever because it's a very top three heavy draft. So Boston, though, kind of gets hurt in this because now you might need to trade for Anthony Davis to keep Kyrie Irving. And to do that, knowing that you're kind of in a desperate situation, you might need to offer Tatum and Brown. And there's mixed opinions on both those guys, too. And so I think that's kind of what you're looking at. I think it's got to at least be Ingram and Ball and probably two future first round picks. And that's kind of the core of a deal. Look, Josh Hart's nice. I think you kind of see the type of player that he is, though. I don't think that's going to make or break a deal. Yeah, like, no, if you guys want to keep him, it's probably fine to the Pelicans, too. So it's kind of one of those things. What do you like of the core assets? So Ingram, Ball, and two future first round picks. Is that better than, say, Tatum, Brown, and two future first round picks? One of those, which might be, say, the Memphis pick, which is top six protected next year. You know, the Lakers might need to throw four in there too. Like, there is an element of a bidding war in all of this.
It really is. I guess my concern here, if I were the Pelicans and I were holding my breath for Danny Ainge, I've already lost my breath. Right?
Yeah.
It's probably not going to end particularly well for me. And you know, it's also, you know, the idea of acquiring Anthony Davis in order to keep Kyrie Irving. That's not quite how Ainge has operated to this point. It's basically been, I mean, the dude traded Isaiah Thomas when he was at his absolute most beloved level in Boston just for, you know, at the very idea of landing Kyrie and extending their window there, right? He has spoken, I think, a few times about how it was tough to watch the Celtics window shut all around him when he was there as a player. And then, you know, that kind of offers you some context as to why he winds up trading Paul Pierce, right? He's extremely risk averse. And it's really hard for me to see him offering both Brown and Tatum, though, you know, if there's one thing that we saw these last playoffs, it's, is it even worth keeping that window open, right?
Yeah.
Is it even, we saw what Giannis did to that team and what Giannis seems to be preparing to do for the next decade plus. Is it even worth holding on to a couple, I would say, tier B guys just for the sake of propping open a window that you might be better off slamming shut anyway?
Yeah, no, and that's the big question. You know, I can tell you they've been very aggressive for years now going after AD, and it seems like this is a guy he's kind of zeroed in on. There was a lot of talk, even of the Celtics calling the Pelicans before the trade deadline, being like, don't trade AD, we'll make you a major offer in the offseason. You know, they couldn't make an actual deal, but it doesn't mean they couldn't talk about something.
Yeah.
So conversations were had. It's a new regime now. You do have to be very wary of trading with Danny Ainge, and Griffin even spoke about that, being like, we have a good relationship. And it's like, okay, I don't know if anyone's going to screw anyone over here, but I don't think your friendship's going to stop him from doing what's in the best interest of the franchise. So there's questions all around. And, you know, it also depends on the outlook that David Griffin's taking with this Pelicans club. He's got a lot of job security. We obviously know that. You know, there's no ownership mandate anymore of like, get into the playoffs next year. Conceivably, you know, maybe they take a years long approach to it and go, let's trade with the Knicks and bring in these really raw young guys, the third overall pick, and screw the playoffs next year. you know, rookies, including Zion and Anthony Davis, are not all that impactful their rookie years. Like, Zion's not leading this team to the playoffs almost at all. Whatever's going to be put around him, it's other guys doing it. AD wasn't that amazing his rookie year either. Yeah. And Zion's the most hyped guy coming in. I don't think he's as good as AD was coming into the league. So if he's taking a much longer term approach on it, you kind of value having guys on their rookie years longer. And that can potentially maybe be a sticking point with Brandon Ingram. I think that he's on the final year of his rookie deal next season, I think, then you've almost got to pay him. And if you value that flexibility, that's a little bit scary, because all of a sudden he's on his second deal and he's going to be getting his third by the time Zion comes up for his second. And maybe you don't want guys on that kind of too big of a gap in their timeline. Whereas Tatum and Brown at least have an extra year, I think, for Brown, and Tatum's got like two more after that. So there's a little bit more leeway there with it. So that's also something that kind of needs to get factored in. The Pelicans screwed themselves in the AD era by trading first round pick after first round pick for guys like Tyreek Evans and other, and Ryan Anderson and Omer freaking Oshik, and floated their salary cap so that they had no flexibility whatsoever. And the one time they had a little bit, they signed Solomon Hill. Go us. And then you look at like what the Sixers did, being patient, building through the draft, whatever you think of the process, they managed to trade for Jimmy Butler and Tobias Harris in a 2-month period because they had those young assets on cheap deals and salary cap flexibility that goes with it. And if you value that, Ingram coming up on that second deal is a bit of a concern to me.
Yeah, the that's to me the best counterpoint made against Ingram. I don't even think it has anything to do with him as a player, which there are questions about him as a player. I'd be the first among Laker fans to point them out. But the contract thing is a legitimate concern, and you know, you combine that with his injury thing right now, and David Griffin, who by all accounts, and I heard it out here quite a bit, that he really, really liked Brandon Ingram as a player. He really thinks he has a bright future ahead of him. But there are question marks there that are going to make that really interesting. The last point here that I want to end on has to do with what Zion's presence there does to New Orleans' willingness here to make a deal, period. One of the concerns before they won the lottery was, were they going to be able to sell tickets? Are they going to be able to put a package out there on the court that fans aren't going to completely turn their backs on, right? There's always going to be, when you trade away a superstar, there's always going to be an us-against-the-world kind of mentality initially, right? But eventually the team just isn't very good, and that dissipates to a little bit more apathy. But because Zion Williamson is there, and because he is, as you said, one of the more hyped players, and rightfully so, by the way, but one of the more hyped college players that we can really remember, now that might make New Orleans and at least ownership a little bit more willing to say, okay, we're going to dig our feet in here, we're going to go through a multi-year rebuild, and we'll see where that leaves us at the end of all of this. And I think, you know, we can talk about what that does for the Lakers and what that does for the Knicks and what that does for Boston. But for New Orleans, like, obviously getting Zion is a really good thing. He's a really good player, and he's going to be incredible. But this kind of sort of allows, if not forces, New Orleans to do the right thing here, that they can, they now have the freedom, because they don't have to worry about putting butts in seats, to do the right thing and actually go about this rebuild the right way.
Yeah, and that would be my preferred direction. And maybe I'm burned on the Dell Demps era, but I see this almost as kind of like a way to right the sins of the past. Yeah. And I don't think they're worried about people showing up. They've already sold 3,500 new season tickets. Like, it's unbelievable, like, the energy from all of this, from everyone I've talked to. Like, you know, they're going to be one of the hottest tickets in town. And there's a lot that goes on here in New Orleans that can pull you away from the Smoothie King Center.
I can tell you from firsthand experience.
I know. You were in town. I didn't get to meet you in person. Yeah. We were texting, though, I remember, and I think I had something going on, but it's a fun place. Like, there's a lot of reasons to not go watch basketball. Like, and particularly when the team's bad. But now you have this kind of exciting young guy here, and this is an entirely different thing if they land at 7, when maybe you want to flip Anthony Davis for guys that get you into the playoffs next year for a package similar to maybe what it was like when they traded Chris Paul originally to the Lakers in that 3 kind of ish team deal potential with the Houston Rockets. The team they were bringing back was not necessarily like a young team that could grow into a regular playoff contender. It was a team that would get them in as the seventh or eighth seed the year after they had just been the eighth seed, I think, or seventh seed at the time. Mm-hmm. And you needed to do that because you weren't going to have Chris Paul and you needed to keep interest. Now there's interest. There's almost more, there's a bigger ability to have patience than there was before. And so I wonder if that contract issue and keeping your books pretty clean and guys on cheap deals becomes even more appealing than what it would have been before, because cool, everything's good, Zion's coming.
Yeah. It's going to be fascinating. This whole, I mean, as if this offseason wasn't going to be wild enough. The team that is trading away Anthony Davis lands Zion Williamson. It's great. It's incredible for the league.
You know, I think having, you know, small markets be relevant is actually a good thing, you know, and I'm from LA. I love Los Angeles. So, you know, it's one of those things, like, you just want more teams being more interesting. I think that's good in general. People still tune in to most things now. So it's going to be fun. It makes New Orleans a really intriguing team for the next number of years. And all I'm hoping is that, like, an AD trade comes out of nowhere. Like, I don't want to hear talks and things leaking before that, because if that's going on, this is going to maybe get miserable again. And, like, let's just have a deal that gets done and not have it be like what it was before or the trade deadline.
All right. So we'll just make it the number four pick, Kyle Kuzma and Josh Hart. And then, you know, we'll get the deal done. We'll get
we'll build it around there. Right.
All right. Well, Jake, thank you very much. That's Jake Madison. He hosts Locked On Pelicans. He does stuff for LockedOnPelicans.com. He is at Nola Jake on Twitter. Give him a follow. The show has been great. Congratulations. I saw you up there in the 70s on the top one, top whatever iTunes chart. That's great.
Yeah, thanks. That was like unexpected all of a sudden. And yeah, Zion Williamson driving traffic. Like, thank you guys. Thanks, NBA.
We'll take it. Have a good one, man.
All right. Thanks.